Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Anybody in?
Save big money at Menards.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris with Mark Grody bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Number 1.
It's time for 5 on it here with Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody. Who is it at Hallis Hall? Question number 1. Did Ben Johnson's first game as a head coach give you any qualms about him moving forward?
A little bit. Yesterday, I thought so before I heard him talk at around 4-ish. Because I'm going, timeouts and challenges. And he thought he was going to kick it where at the 2-minute warning? What was happening there? Not necessarily qualms, because you knew somebody like that was going to get the things fixed. But I'm like, well, how long is it going to take to acknowledge these things and get things fixed? I feel better today. So I will admit that I don't know if it was doubt, but it did make me realize, this is perhaps really not plug and play. Like, you already knew it wasn't going to be plug and play. This is not a move-in ready home, so to speak. There was still some renovation that you had to do. You know, like, maybe you weren't happy with the closet size or something. That's usually me.
Yeah, but say, I don't know any woman in my life that I've ever met personally that has been happy with her closet size. And I've had some people with some walk-in, like, take a trip down the hall walk-in closets.
I need one of those. But the point is, you knew that wasn't going to be the case here. This is not a move-in ready home. So I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, oh, well, how long are these adjustments really going to take? You know, I didn't really think that Ben Johnson being a head coach was going to be that much more for him, because I already had such a high opinion of him. So yesterday was better because it gives you an insight into where he feels like he is. And for that, I feel like the week 2 jump, I'm not going to expect it to be incredible. Like, it's not going from like my apartment to Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Oh,
but it is going to be something where I'm still expecting to see some real progress made.
Do you have the permits for the wing that you wanted to add to your house? Because, you know, you need permits to have that added on.
So I have a convertible, which means I don't even have a quote real bedroom.
Oh my goodness.
But I got 4 closets.
That's a lot of closets.
And that's yet how
you still
I do.
Want more closet space.
I'll take closets over living. Thank you.
I don't know how I feel about that. As far as the qualms for Ben Johnson, do I have any after his first game as an NFL head coach? Absolutely not, because it was his first game as an NFL head coach. And everything that he said in his post-game press conference was satisfactory in explanation and understanding and self-awareness of what he did not do well enough. That's why I have no qualms with it. That's why I have 100% confidence in Ben Johnson to get this thing turned around.
So no qualms.
No qualms at all.
Oh, get this. This is from a little Twitter account called the NFL. Maybe you've heard of it.
Yes.
Gold check mark. Guess who the NFC Offensive Player of the Week is?
It better not be J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
In his rookie debut, or sorry, first NFL game, not rookie debut, but NFL debut.
I believe the term was premiere, which was the patch that they used. Like, this is this is Flag and Anthem, and my patch today is the Ryder Cup.
Okay.
But his was premiere.
Although he is ineligible, if you were wondering, for NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, because last year was technically his first year.
NFC Players of the Week, J.J. McCarthy on offense. 143 passing yards, 2 passing touchdowns, and a rush touchdown. That's what you get for coming back on Monday Night Football.
I also have no qualms with that designation for J.J. McCarthy, because he was spectacular in the
Player of the Week.
Hey, have you guys heard he's from Chicago? They didn't say it on the broadcast, I don't know, 3,000 times.
Nazareth Academy, stand up.
Well, before he went to IMG, anyway.
Number 2.
Oh, man. It's week 1 that just passed us by. And we already have a kicker question on 5 on it.
Yeah!
On Tuesday, the 49ers signed former Bears kicker Eddie Pinheiro to replace kicker Jake Moody after seeing Bears kicker Cairo Santos' struggles in the Bears' season-opening loss to the Vikings. Should Chicago also be in the market for a replacement kicker?
See, here's the thing. Let's go back to a time. The DJ Moore laugh just got me. Let's go back to Christmas Eve 2023.
Okay, I'm there.
Where the Bears signed Cairo Santos to a four-year extension through the 2027 season.
I remember it well.
Four more years.
I don't know that anyone was chanting that about him at that time.
Well, at the time, he was the most accurate kicker in Bears history, making 90.5% of his field goal attempts. Last season, the extra points were a concern. We obviously heard about low trajectory and whatnot. But that is significant when you're trying to make space in a salary cap. This is a guy who got extended for many years. You know, the Bears' commitment to special teams, regardless of how you feel about roster resource allocation and cap allocation, they did spend two draft picks in the past 4 years on punters. And they also extended Cairo Santos multiple years. They really like their people when they get them. So that factors in for me.
It's hard to believe that someone's going to come in off the street, per se, and replace the kicker that they currently have in Cairo Santos. I do not object to the idea of bringing kickers in the building to let him know that, hey, you know, we're always looking, because that's what a GM in a front office's job is, to always be looking for someone who can help their team. And if someone is out there that can consistently kick the ball through the end zone when called upon, or can kick 50-plus yard field goals consistently when called on, you might want to take a look at them.
A good point was brought up recently talking about the type of ball the NFL is using and how that is also helping people kick farther field goals. Like,
yes,
it's not just like leg strength increased dramatically or something. Like, I, in my head, I'm conflating it. You know, because you see the kicker leg strength, you see the how long the field goals are going. And then I think about, like, say, how pitching just happened where everybody's throwing 100 now. You know, that's how I'm equating it. But I don't think that's the case when it comes to kicking.
Yeah, I don't think that's the same with the kicking.
Well, I mean, it could be. Like, strength is always evolving and people are getting stronger as a species. That is true. Dumber, perhaps, but stronger.
Definitely dumber.
So one is, both seem to be voluntary, but in this case, I think, you know, leg strength can get better, but when you're seeing the results happen via yards, you've got to acknowledge the ball in all of this, but it does make you realize, it also helps you understand people's limitations too.
Also, 630, pretty good point on the text line. They named the guy a captain, for God's sakes. I think we're stuck with this guy. Don't ever forget the C.
Patrick Manley did say that 50-yarder was a tough one at Soldier Field because of the wind. He would know. But we deserve to be able to talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
Number three.
This is Raheemy and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score. Grody will set the scene at Hallis Hall for us at 125. Five on it rolls on with question number three. Which rookie have you been more impressed by this season? Cubs right-hander Cade Horton or White Sox shortstop Colson Montgomery?
Okay, both are really good. Like, both have some really amazing stories here. I sound like a cheerleader. Both are so great. But Colson Montgomery, who, to begin spring training, I'm thinking, oh, well, he's your shortstop. He's going to get called up. He's going to be a part of this team. They DFA'd the previous shortstop. Understandable. That makes sense. I know that he had hitting issues. I know that there was a back concern. And then they're like, nah, we're going to send him to AAA. Then we're going to send him to Arizona. And I'm thinking to myself, this isn't good. Like, this.
It wasn't good. Let's be clear.
Reeks of organizational failure if this is how I'm playing it out in my head. But that was the right move. The best thing he could do was come up and hit he has. There's a lot you can say about how at least the White Sox felt like they did the right thing for him, and he's producing at the big league level, hitting home runs, especially after the All-Star break, in a way that I don't know that a lot of us saw coming, even with the talent that we knew him to have. But Cade Horton, it still goes to him because here we were, Matt Spiegel appropriately said it, talking about how you had to accept the fact that Cade Horton is in your playoff rotation as a starter. Now he might be your game one starter in a playoff rotation. And they let him throw more than 75 pitches last night. Wow, so amazing. Nice to see.
Ah, here we go.
If he was throwing a no-hitter, though, I don't know. They probably would have took him out.
75, you're done. You're done, kiddo.
Yeah, what changed? What changed?
I hope he said something. But he made it sound really good in the post-game press conference. Like, he was on board. It sounded that way. But I hope that at least got him to, like, buy him some more pitches.
So who are you giving the nod to?
It's Cade. Think about it. You're now trusting him in a playoff game to that extent.
Well, if Colson Montgomery was in a playoff situation, he would also be trusted in a playoff game as a middle of the order bat.
I know you love predictions. I don't think the White Sox are going to make the playoffs soon.
They've already been eliminated from this year's playoffs. They are one of two teams to have been eliminated already from the Major League playoff picture.
Are you telling me it's not going to be Rocktober?
It's not going to be Rocktober. I will say this, though. Cade Horton's been nice. He's been great. But as far as redemption stories go, who can beat Colson Montgomery? As you said, all the way back down to Arizona where we thought, is he ever going to play in the major leagues? Is he a bust?
The headlines weren't great.
They were tantalizing. It's got all the makings of a Lifetime movie if they were targeted towards men. That's what Colson Montgomery is. If Lifetime movies were things that most men voluntarily watch as opposed to having a woman force them to watch them with her.
How dare you do that to the movie Psycho Realtor?
A men's movie network would be both the best and worst thing that could happen.
Spike TV.
Oh, I guess technically, yeah. I never thought about it that way.
That's what Spike TV was.
I was about to say, what about the Nashville Network?
Joe Reagan's.
What?
It's more targeted than just men.
What year is it in my brain?
Okay, but
what is happening?
Cade Horton, very impressive. He's 10-4. He's got a 2.70 ERA. He has been unbelievable since the All-Star break. An ERA plus of 141. A whip of 1.109. But let's talk about Colson Montgomery. Because Colson Montgomery has 18 home runs in his last 39 games. Colson Montgomery is just two off the lead in terms of home runs for the Chicago White Sox. Colson Montgomery ain't that far behind, I don't know, Kyle Tucker.
Ah!
I just want to point that out. And I also want to say this. Colson Montgomery has played in 54 games. That is one-third of a baseball season. Colson Montgomery has a 2.7 WAR. Cade Horton doesn't have a 2.7 WAR. He has a 1.7 WAR. He's got him by a full win. He's got him by a full win in less time. The next highest player on the White Sox in WAR is Kyle Teal with a 1.9. By the way, don't sleep on Kyle Teal. He has been phenomenal.
I don't think anybody
since
is.
Since the All-Star break.
I'm pretty confident in their catching talent, actually.
So I think Kyle Teal has won that primary catcher job. And I'll say this. That team, those guys, look out for the White Sox in 2026. Yeah, you heard it here first.
Another prediction. There's so many. Can somebody keep track of these?
Look out for the White Sox is not a prediction. That's just making you aware. It's not a thunderstorm warning. It's a thunderstorm watch. Got it? You know the difference, right?
When people freak out about a tornado watch. Yeah, you should definitely pay attention to those. But the warning is the real thing.
Yeah, so yeah, it's Colson Montgomery.
Number four.
Josh Giddey, go.
Well, there's one thing I learned. You are the president, Robbie, of the Josh Giddey Committee.
The Josh Giddey bandwagon. I'm the conductor.
Yeah, we are making a committee, and it is happening today. And it's not the party planning committee, and it's not the Finer Things Club. It is the Josh Giddey Committee. And Robbie is the president. I'm pretty sure he deserves some of the commission.
All are welcome.
I'm gonna award you commission in Australian dollars. They're not as much as American dollars, but it's something.
No, bloomin' onions. Just bloom. Our currency is bloomin' onions in the Josh Giddey Committee.
I don't think Josh Giddey's allowed to eat bloomin' onions.
I prefer
Aussie
fries.
But do you want Vegemite? Like, that's the other thing. Okay, after sitting with this for almost 24 hours, the only thing I can think is, ruthless me, was like, you have no other place to go. Welcome to Chicago again for $11 million, and you'll be happy. But I don't think that's what happened here. I think that there was a genuine commitment made by the organization to say, we want to invest in you and have you be happy. Because that's a contract that he should absolutely be happy about. Like, that was the part of it when we were talking about Jonathan Kuminga. Yes, you retain your player if you're the Warriors, but his name has been involved in trade talks for almost as long as Zach LaVine's has been. Like, are you happy when you're on that team? how do you want that person to feel? And I feel like that's what the organization did here. Like this was a gesture in honesty and in, I think, in kind, respecting who they think they want to invest in. But as far as his relative value to the rest of the market, I can't help but think about, say, the Patrick Williams contract and how that colors my thought process about this. I understand that they wanted to make it right by him. It's just the second apron is a scary place. The NBA CBA and how it works, you can't move players like you previously wanted to, and they didn't move players by practice to begin with before this. So that's part of it for me is how flexible is it for you if you need to change course? It seems like this is a team-friendly contract.
Josh Giddey, 21.2 points per game, 10.7 points per, or excuse me, rebounds per game.
Go on.
9.3 assists per game and 45.7% from deep after the trade deadline. Those are really good numbers. They also finished the regular season by winning 15 of their last 20 games. Those are really good numbers. All that to do the same thing they'd done the previous 2 years, which is flame out in the play-in against the Miami Heat. That being said, $25 million per, there's worse ways that the Bulls could have spent $25 million per. And if you believe in 23-year-old Josh Giddey getting better, I guess this will have to do. I don't love it, but I am resigned to understand that this is just the world we live in now, in which we will accept Josh Giddey as the starting point guard for the Bulls and understand maybe more half-court heaves are coming our way because, according to Shams Charania, the NBA has taken out half-court heaves and full-court heaves from actually being a stat that counts against you because people had stopped taking big shots at the end of
halves
and quarters.
It's a team stat now. I am looking forward to some ridiculously overconfident heat checks. Like, I want some Denzel Valentine stuff going on. Just not at the end of the game when the game's on the line. But at halftime, oh, yeah. I need people to think that they are... I want people yelling Kobe every time. Like, I want some irrational shots being taken.
Also, for some added context, if you think $25 million is a lot per year, that currently is tied 72nd in the NBA for
yearly
salary.
There's a lot of bad contracts out there.
There are, man. When the Max first came out...
I mean, he's a good player. It's not a bad contract.
When the new TV deal came out and the Max first came out, the way that Maxes were being handed out to people who you had no idea had that much value...
You get a Max, and you get a Max.
I mean, it was incredible. It was a time.
And watch Saved by the Bell so we can see some kids go to the Max.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Josh Giddey.
What do we do with...
It's a quickie.
What do we do with number four?
Number five here, we're going to ask it real quick.
Number five.
Is September Chicago's best month when it comes to weather? Layla, Marshall, quick, go.
Absolutely it is. Why? Because number one, hoodie season in full effect. But you get the forecast like you have right now, the temperature is going to get back into the 80s for a week.
Everybody knows there's 11 seasons in Chicago.
Oh.
I believe that we just had false fall, and now we are going back to second summer. The problem was we never had a fake summer. For me, it's still like June, July, and not this June because this June was too cold. I said it. I live in a different temperature range from you all. My nose runs at 75 degrees. I've suddenly decided to look forward to summer, which I didn't do previously in my life. So it's July and August for me. I like August now because I live here. I hated August.
Okay. We'll allow it.
September's
so we don't have a choice.
It's hoodie shorts weather, I think.
It is. That it is.
I don't participate in it. I don't pretend to know about it, but hoodie shorts is a thing. Somebody can teach me the ways because I have no idea how to wear that. I just do pants a lot. We have more to come here on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. I actually think Anthony Heron might have a thing or two to say about that very topic.
We'll ask him.
Along with a lot more, because the Brian Flores defensive line project is also something we want to discuss with him. We will do that with the Iowa Hawkeye, the former NFL defensive lineman, next on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
Beyond Caleb himself, the rest of this Bears outfit, the Bears offense, the Bears run game, all those things can enhance the way we end up viewing the performance specifically of the Bears quarterback.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
Anthony Herron receives credit for it. Tenacious job by Anthony Herron, number 99.
Mr. Hedden, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
Big and Herron on 670 The Score.
Yeah, you can be outside of the club and you can think somebody else is a punk. Well, I don't think
go
we
ahead.
Can say the rest of the
no,
song.
Go ahead.
No, I'm pretty sure that we get fired. But the point is, you're never scared. You're always happy to go to Anthony Herron live on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. As I mentioned, a former Iowa Hawkeye, former NFL athlete as well. He works now for us, Fox 32. You can see him on their Bears shows. And, of course, the Big Ten Network. The man is everywhere. It is football season. It is Anthony Herron season. And how you doing?
Layla, Marshall, I'm fantastic. Really appreciate you guys having me on. And I'm at the Big Ten Network studios right now because we're preparing a few additional goodies, I'll call them, because Saturday I'm going to be on the broadcast at Iowa City, where Kirk Ferentz is right now tied with Woody Hayes for the all-time wins record in Big Ten football. With a win on Saturday over UMass, he will become the all-time Big Ten conference leader. So I'm on the call for that one. It was already preordained. It was on the schedule before the season. It just worked out that the Cyclones took down the Hawkeyes. And so now this is the potential record breaker I'm going to call. Really looking forward to it.
Number one, that was quite the upset, and we didn't even touch on it. The spread being 3.5, I was like, why is it so low? Well, the Hawkeyes proved me wrong. And then secondly, I think to be there for that moment, are you going to get to talk to Kirk Ferentz in person at all? Like, do you get to see him in this process? Because you're up in the press box calling the game.
Right. I'll get there Thursday evening. We'll have some production meetings with the home. Usually we'll talk to the home coaching staff on Fridays on the day before the games. And the visiting team will usually do via Zoom a little bit earlier in the week. But, yeah, I'll get to head to Iowa City and get to spend some time with my old coach. Because I had Hayden Fry for my first 2 years and then Kirk Ferentz my last 2 years. So bookended by, you know, two of these guys who've had more success than most coaches could ever dream of in Big Ten football and specifically at my alma mater. So, yeah, it's going to be a good weekend.
And I was a sideline reporter in the inaugural season of the Big Ten Network. Let me tell you something. 2 trips to Iowa City. I ain't never had a bad time in Iowa City. Let me just leave you with that.
It's the quintessential college town. You can have a little bit of anything you're looking for while you're there.
I did have a good time at the 2 tailgates I went to in Iowa City as well. Yeah. We approve.
And Layla, I'm going to be with one of your old compadres from Texas, the voice of the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Followill. He'll be on the call with me. Mark's one of my main partners at the Big Ten Network. I know you've gotten to know Mark in the past, so we've shared some fun Layla stories over the years. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Danny Rogers as well.
Mark was at my wedding, and I still talk to Mark. So that tells you a lot about how I think about him.
Wow.
The guest of honor, not so much. And not only is it great to talk about college football in that discussion, too, because Cy-Hawk was a big game over the past week and one of the few you really wanted to watch if you're a college football fan. But then we had the main event on Monday night. What were your overall takeaways out of what you saw?
So I've spoken to you guys about the running back position for the Bears for a while now. And to pare it down to just whether or not they've gotten deep enough at running back and whether or not they should have acquired additional personnel, that concern still exists after the Monday night game. But also just whether or not the Bears schemed up the run game in an adequate manner. Coming out of that one, I'm just thinking, man, there was just a lot in the game plan that felt, I think, somewhat basic when it came down to the way the Bears tried to attack with the run, the infrequency it felt like at times that they went about the run game also. So, you know, to me, I kind of come back to some of those core principles. Unless you've got a dude, a proven commodity at quarterback and, frankly, wide receiver as well, just kind of doing the volume passing thing, you know, I did like a lot of elements, some moments from the Bears offense. There's no doubt about that. You don't get away from that, but the Bears struggling to run the football with the high-dollar offensive line, that concerns me. That concerns me until proven otherwise.
Is it more scheme, the personnel at running back, or just how good that defensive line for the Vikings is?
Well, the defensive line for the Vikings, I mean, there's an element of physicality they bring to it, but then also, even when they're not blitzing, there's constant movement. And so your landmarks as the offensive line are sort of in constant, you know, sort of conflict, because you're thinking one moment that this is going to be your target area in the run game, and then that player might flop to the complete opposite side of the formation by the time you actually snap the football. So that makes it tough from a run game perspective. And then, of course, they've got guys up front who are really effective at penetrating, not only just the way they hit the blocks, but because it's difficult to get movement on them when they're getting skinny in creases, when they're just penetrating enough to sort of log jam things at what you're hoping the point of attack will be. When you have a back like DeAndre Swift that's always looking for that opportunity to bounce, then it can throw off his vision, because he's not one of these guys that runs through the smoke where you're hoping that if the hole isn't there immediately, that it'll declare during the carry. And that's not really just how he's equipped. That's not how he's wired. So there's a few different elements of that front seven for the Vikings because of what they do from an eye candy perspective. And I was talking about this during the pregame coverage that myself, Lou Kanellis, Tina Wynn, Cassie Carlson were all out there at Soldier Field before their Monday night game. And that eye candy from the Vikings, it doesn't always lead to actual blitz pressure, but it throws off your landmarks in the run game. And you know, the offensive line, I thought there was a lot to be desired. I really expected more from the Bears up front on the O-line, just with their ability to create movement and create even creases. You don't have to blow guys off the ball to create creases and alleys for the run game. DeAndre Swift is DeAndre Swift. So I know social media will continue to voice that frustration with his run style, but I mean, I knew him before he got to Chicago. Didn't know him personally, but I know his run style. I've evaluated DeAndre Swift throughout his entire career, even going back to his high school career. I know how he runs the rock. I think the Bears should know how he runs the rock. So it does still surprise me that they haven't found a guy who's more north-south in his wiring to at least pair with a guy who does have legit game-breaking skills in the open field like Swift does, but he's not your every-down running back.
And Aaron, we are talking to him. He's over at Big Ten Network right now physically, but he's with us here in Raheem Ann Harris on 670 The Score with Mark Grody. And another thing about that Vikings defensive line that we saw, very different looks in the second half compared to what we saw out of the first. But also some obvious questions where you're still asking yourself the same thing. Like we saw when they did bring up an extra rusher, how they would realign the line where people were blatantly shooting the gap pre-snap. Protection was not slid. What were your evaluations of that as well in being able to stop the Bears offensively? I feel like that was a big part of it, where we're asking ourselves the same question. Well, if I'm seeing this before the snap and they're not moving around and the line didn't move, then whose man is the guy who's shooting a gap, for example?
And it's felt more obvious at times in the past if the Bears have broken the huddle late with previous offensive play callers and then they've had difficulty sifting through things with a young quarterback and a center who may or may not be a veteran, may or may not really know what he's looking at, or may just be overwhelmed by his responsibilities post-snap. But you got Drew Dalton, spent money on him. I do think Ben Johnson, for the most part, seemed to get the play in pretty quickly, where they were able to get it in the huddle, break the huddle, and Caleb Williams and Drew Dalton had a chance to evaluate that Vikings defense pre-snap. But then it's one thing to call it in the huddle. It's one thing to draw it up on the grease board. It's a completely different animal when the fan gets filthy out there and you've got the Vikings crossing all over the place and Jonathan Grenard is right here one second, somewhere else the next second. You know, there's a lot they throw at you within their front seven to really try to diagnose. And so from a pass protection perspective, the Bears, you know, did struggle with that. Now the legs of Caleb Williams did get him out of that jeopardy. And I thought early in the game, throughout a lot of the first half, he was very decisive. Yes, the inaccuracy showed up at times throughout the game. I thought, especially in the first half, he was really decisive with where and how he delivered the football just to get it out of his hands. Or at times when he felt like it was time to evacuate the pocket, he did it quickly. That decisiveness didn't sustain itself throughout the game, especially once the Vikings finally did get some offense going. Then that puts a different type of pressure on the Bears offense, because now there's something to respond to. There's game flow that's going in the direction of your opponent, and the Bears didn't do an effective job of responding to that.
And neither Caleb Williams or Ben Johnson had great answers as to why the inaccuracy on what looked like pretty basic NFL throws went by the wayside in the second half. Do you have an explanation?
No, but it certainly looked like some of the moments his rookie year. Now, I'll also say this, because Caleb sailing the ball, and specifically where Caleb tends to miss, he seemingly tends to miss high. And, you know, this is just conjecture on my part, but when you're missing high on vertical passes, it does seem like you're trying to keep the ball out of harm's way, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but there's just a consistency to the amount of times that Caleb Williams misses high. So to have lower interception numbers because you're putting it where the defender doesn't have a chance to pick it off, there's some positive to that. An incompletion is better than an interception. But at some point here, and I do think this is twofold, where if a playmaker truly develops, where you say, just put it anywhere near that guy and he's got your back, he's going to go and get the football or at least make sure the defender doesn't intercept it, then there's something to be said for that. That picks a quarterback up. Roman Dunze isn't that yet. DJ Moore isn't the type of receiver that extends his hands away from his frame. Olamide Zaccheaus might be Layla's height. So I don't know who that is.
I think he's taller than me. I'm pretty sure.
Slightly.
But he did look short out there. I agree.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I love that there's a connection that's been established between Caleb Williams and Olamide Zaccheaus. And there's definitely a trust there. If there's any pass catcher that Caleb does occasionally give that opportunity to just give him a kind of a 50-50 ball in some traffic, he's done that with Roman Dunze more than any other pass catcher in his just season plus of being the Bears quarterback. Frankly, Rome just doesn't come up with it as frequently as I've anticipated he would. I was really eager to see Roman Dunze as an NFL receiver after evaluating his college career, because he does have that jump ball ability. He can elevate, he can pluck the ball with his hands, and it's flashed on occasion with the Bears. But by comparison to some of his contemporaries, it's been, we're talking about the inconsistencies of Caleb, but think about in the fourth quarter when the Vikings finally started to really surge in the game, and there's a drive where the Bears are trying to answer the Vikings, and there's that hole shot on an out route, really more of a corner route, where it was between the second and the third level of the defense, and Caleb puts it right there. Just a beautiful ball that goes right through the outstretched hands of Roman Dunze. And there's been a bunch of those moments during Rome's young career so far. So the inaccuracies of Caleb, they're a big part of the storyline that's worthy of concern. But also, I would love to see some playmaker emerge. Maybe it's Colston Loveland. Maybe it's Luther Burden. Maybe it's Roman Dunze, but there needs to be somebody we look to and say, you know what? When Caleb puts that ball in traffic to that guy, we know he's coming down with it. And at the moment, I don't know that guy's – he certainly hasn't shown himself on this roster yet.
I'm glad you brought up the rookies, Ant, because we want to ask you that question next. We have to take a break, but we want to evaluate not just the draft class that we just saw in 2025, but some other notable draft picks and how they fared in this. So I know you're good at evaluating that talent as well. We will do that next with you, if that's cool, here in Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on the Score. All right, we got Ant's approval. We'll pick up there next.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on the Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
The Raheem and Harris Show with Mark Grody. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I mean, every draft has like just pockets that you just don't fall into.
Of all the people to say that, where I'm asking what exactly he meant when he said that, that's Ryan Poles. This is Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score. Mark will join us at 125. We continue our segment with Anthony Herring, kind enough to join us for another one. And Ant, I was reminded of a segment you and I did co-hosting a few months ago where we evaluated at that point, what was three Ryan Poles draft classes and how some needed to step up, others needed to perform even more. And then they answer with Ben Johnson and the draft class that we just saw of 2025. And I'm asking myself in a lot of ways the same thing. When Ozzie Trapillo's the backup, Shamar Turner doesn't play, Luther Burden saw limited action, Kyle Manungai didn't get a running back, at least a carry, a handoff, nothing. He was in there for a couple of blocking packages. And then Colson Loveland only had two targets. He had two catches. But
don't forget about Karan.
Karan was the year before.
Oh, you're talking about specific.
Karan was inactive as well. Karan Amagaji. So what are your takeaways from what you saw out of the class of 2025 in this game?
You're only going to hit on draft picks to a certain degree, even when you're really successful in the NFL draft. But as far as guys you draft that just turn into stars in the sport, they're going to be somewhat infrequent, but we're not seeing anyone who's proven to that commodity yet, you know, who's proven to that extent that they are that they are the guy at the top of the opposing game plan, where you just say the opposing defense or the opposing offense recognizes that individual as a problem who we are just going to have our hands full because we can't do a thing with them. We got to scheme away from them. We got to scheme around them. Something, because they are just unstoppable, this force of nature. They don't have any of those guys right now. And it's hard because that is a difficult sort of stature to judge most players by. But the best teams in football do have a couple of those guys, a few of those guys within the roster. And your hope is to be able to draft that individual that you say, you know what, that's someone who we know we can build this thing around for years to come because of the degree of their excellence. And there's a lot of guys worthy of being excited about. I'm excited about Colston Loveland. We'll see whether or not he becomes that, but you know, he's just a game into his NFL career. Kyle Manungai is a seventh round pick. So my anticipation, I thought the Bears were going to draft a veteran running back to likely pair with DeAndre Swift, and they opted not to do that. But it's hard to sort of juxtapose those couple of things. Luther Burden got some action in the game the other night. From an attitude perspective, a confidence, a swag perspective, for lack of a better term, he seems to be a guy who oozes some of that. So hopefully as he gets some opportunities in game, that shines through. And you see someone who's not afraid to go pluck the ball, mush a defender in the face, and go racing towards the end zone because he just thinks he's that guy. I want to see a little bit more of that exuded by some of the playmakers from the Bears.
Okay, let's broaden that question, what you just said about guys being a quote-unquote problem. We've now got 4 years of draft classes, 34 players. I see one problem. His name's Kyler Gordon. I see 14 guys drafted in the top three rounds. Am I missing anyone in your eyes?
I definitely like the development arc of Javon Dexter, but no, I wouldn't say that he's some kind of a game wrecker at this point in his development. I'm pleased with certain things I've seen from Donnell Wright. It was a bogus holding call on him, but I don't think Donnell Wright, someone folks look at on film and say, well, there's no way we're going to beat that guy, you know, but he's a good, promising, still young football player. But so much of that at certain spots has to marry together where, you know, the rhythm and timing of the quarterback, the decision-making of the head coach, the schematics of the offensive play caller, all those things frequently need to come together for those things. Roman Dunze, I'm confident there are folks in the building who are really hopeful Roman Dunze just continues to show development because there's a skill set that's very apparent. You just like it to show up consistently, especially in critical moments in the game where he does have the wherewithal to just go and pluck the football and keep rolling with it. Make some of these things look easy. Make it look like you're a man amongst boys on occasion. No, there's not guys who I see there with that yet. And that's, you know, part of the discussion of how much of it is scheme, how much of it is the evaluation of the talent in draft, how much of it is just the flow of the game, because I was very encouraged by a lot of things I saw from that Bears defensive front. We haven't seen a D-line put several series together like that where they're just overwhelming the opposing offensive line. It's been a minute since we saw that. We're talking like Akeem Hicks, Khalil Mack, you know, types of fronts that were really getting that done at a high level. for series upon series. Now, they didn't do it in the fourth quarter, and that's where you want somebody who's your closer, who's the guy that, all right, when they drop back and they're trying to get back into the game, yeah, you've had J.J. McCarthy rattle for the first three quarters, but now they got a little momentum building. And who's the guy that can just slam the door shut on? That would have been nice if that happened the other night. But there's definitely some encouraging signs from that defensive front. But to answer your question, Marshall, no, I don't think you're necessarily missing a list of guys who just on a depth chart, everybody. I mean, you know, DJ Moore, he's a playmaker, but he's kind of a Swiss Army knife on offense. He's an exceptional playmaker at wide receiver. But Kyler Gordon, yeah, he's a guy that they have to game plan around to know. Jalen Johnson is a player that everyone avoids. He's not a recent Ryan Poles draft pick.
Exactly.
But as far as a guy who, you know, the opponents respect in that way. So for Ryan Poles draft pick, no, I can't really think of one aside from Kyler Gordon that I say opponents have to fear schematically. How do they work around that individual?
Anthony Herron, we appreciate the time and the evaluation along with the perspective. Looking forward to you calling that Iowa game on Big Ten Network as well.
Have fun in Iowa City, big fella.
I appreciate it. Definitely will. We'll be on there 6:30, primetime game, under the lights at Kinnick Stadium. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then I'll be on Sunday morning. We'll have our Fox 32 pregame before the Bears face the Lions.
Can't
oh,
wait.
Yeah. It's a regular Bears Sunday.
I like those.
Right?
Yeah. So you guys will be rocking and rolling over there at Fox 32 for sure. We'll take a look out as we always do. Anthony, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you both.
That's Anthony Herron. And I do look forward to seeing how that's all going to come together on Sunday on Fox. They put a lot of effort into the programming when it comes to the shows.
I love Lou and all those guys over there, but 1 out of 34 ain't good. 1 out of 34 Ryan Poles draft picks to be a problem is not good.
I thought you were talking about shows for a second.
No. I was talking about Kyler Gordon being the only guy. We got other guys that can develop.
You can argue Jaquan Brisker when he's healthy, but that's a big win now as well. We have more coming up because we are going to be joined by our friend Danny Parkins. Do we interrupt his afternoon bath? I guess we're going to find out next.
Rubber ducky, you're the one.
Danny Parkins to talk Bears and more with us on Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score. Rubber.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.